Okay, folks, I was just saying that this week somehow the scene, mental health seems to crop into all of the questions this week in some way, shape, or form. Before I begin, I want to thank the Rosenzweig family. Learning in the Shul this week is sponsored in memory of Bela Freida Bas Reb Chaim Wolf, whose yahrzeit is tonight. And, of course, also in memory of Klonos Ben Moshe Yisrael, and in memory of...
That's my father.
Right.
The one
Zion
honor is
okay, so...
It's a two-week stint.
Right.
It's for
Avram Yoel Ben Shmuel. I forgot to write it on this paper. I have it on the others, but I forgot over here. So, all the Shabbat Shah, it's Avram and Eliyah, and of course, this year, this week, this year, next week, well, all the Shur, Baruch Hashem, and you sponsor a week of learning in this building. You are sponsoring quite a bit. You know, there's all the Shurim and all the learning, and, you know, when you look on the list outside of just the people I know who are learning Daf Yomi, who are part of the Chevra, right? Just the people that, and that doesn't include the fourth column that they left off to sign. Right, that we sent them. It's a. You see how much learning the people are learning. Mishnayos, the people are learning. It's incredible. Ashreinu Matocha. Okay, you know, I'm honored to be a part of this community. Let's talk this week about three questions. I'll put them on the table. You tell me which one we attack, and we'll see where we go. This one is a rather interesting. My friend, and I say that to my friends at home listening on the World Wide Web. I say it with quotation marks. My friend has a major exam coming up. He wants to know if he's allowed to take Adderall. Adderall is a psychostimulant that's used primarily in treating conditions like ADD, ADHD, right? Says he wants to know that he can take an Adderall, quote, since everyone does it, end quote. The friend doesn't suffer from ADHD, but he's under the impression that if he does take the medication, it'll help him focus on the exam and he'll be able to do well. So the question number one is that mutter? Yes or no? And that's the first question. Second question, one of the most beautiful miracles that exists in the world is the miracle of childbirth. However, says the person writing, I was recently at a medical conference that stressed the fears many mothers and, parentheses, fathers, believe it or not, that have at the beginning of birth and the risk of a host of conditions that are surrounded under a greater category known as postpartum depression, but also include postpartum anxiety and postpartum OCD and at times even postpartum psychosis. As I scoured the internet, I've discovered many accounts of postpartum depression and even female studies conducted on Orthodox Jewish women. I think what he means to say is I've seen studies of women who are suffering from postpartum depression that focus on the population of Orthodox Jewish women. There's a professor of nursing. On Long Island, C.R. Zatterer, Dr. Zatterer, she's a nurse, and she has done some major studies. There's a nurse in Israel who wrote a whole book that was published by Feldheim. She and her husband are famous. They do a lot of writing about issues surrounding childbirth and postpartum depression. Their name is Finkelstein. They've written, no relation, I have family named Finkelstein, but they're not related. And they've done a lot of writing both in Hebrew and English. So the writer writes, I was wondering if postpartum depression have any ramifications in halacha. Are there things that men and women need to know about postpartum from a Torah perspective? So I'm talking to my dear friend Dr. Marathi, and he says, well, there's one topic that I was afraid you were going to bring up, but I'll get to that if that is the question that's there. It was not the original intent, but I'll mention it in passing. The last topic is a rerun because someone asked me to please put it back into the hopper for this week. I will be in a hotel for a Shabbaton next weekend. I was told that there is to be no candle lighting in the rooms, but not to worry because there would be ability to light candles outside of the common dining room. Is that okay? Can I light there? Should I? And what other options do I have? So we have the Shabbos candles in the hotel. We have the postpartum depression. And we have the Adderall question for the non-Adderall individual. Houston Astros would probably like that last question. So, you know, you can bang your... Maybe we can show either a show of hands or banging of garbage cans here. Lids. Do people have any preference for any question?
Adderall?
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. So again, the person wants to know... I guess the Houston Astros piece gets everybody, right? So the person wants... It's funny because I think the first or the second Shavuos I was here in the community, so I delivered a two-parter on steroids, steroids in baseball. So when I was done, I was in TNEC that summer, and I was asked, can you talk about your steroids and baseball thing again. So I actually gave it a shear and TNEC, you know, combining those two shear in one. The shear here will be similar, but not exact. This guy is taking an exam. I think, without personal identification, it's a DAT, an MCAT, an LSAT, the bar, something of that level. And it's like a long test that needs sustained concentration. Probably the GMAT would also have fallen into that category, right? So without identifying what the nature of which exam it was, so you don't figure out who wrote to me. So he wants to know his friend does not suffer from ADHD, but wants to take the medication so he or she could have the, sustained attention, right? The test needs, the focus and the attention. Can he do it? So what are the issues? Let's start talking.
Is it a legitimate prescription? Or is he
what difference?
Doing it otherwise?
He's not buying it from a drug dealer, but what difference does that make? It's not legitimate for him.
It could be against the law.
Okay, so if it's against... So the issue...
Against the law of the...
Okay, so halakhically, there's a question called Dina the Mahusa Dina. Maybe, or maybe not. We'll have to talk about that. I'm sure you're very familiar with that rule, Dina Mahusa Dina. It's probably... Right?
2 weeks
ago. Right. I know. I've now managed to get it. We worked that in there twice.
It's spelled differently, though.
Yes. Okay, so... yes, it's Aramaic, yeah. Okay, what else? So we only have, that's the only issue on the table?
No,
come on, guys.
Sure,
what else you got?
Is it something that could potentially damage him?
Oh, very good. Is it, you know, are you allowed to take medication? No need for you if there's potential damage. So I just got off the phone with a psychiatrist on a totally different case. So everything's mental health connected. We're talking about one of these, the best known psychiatrists in the Orthodox Jewish community. He's best known because he's also a Shekel Chazna, if I'm not mistaken. Dr. Harvey Kranzler. He's a very talented individual, and he's a very lovely guy. So, in context of this conversation that we're having, we share a common client. So, Dr. Kranzler, I said to him, like, you know, is there a way to do this and this? And he's trying to really carefully, you know, figure out what the exact combo is that will work for a particular client that we're working with. So, I said to him, it seems like it must be impossible for you to do what you're doing. So he says, let me tell you what I tell my students. I says, there's nothing you can put into your mouth that doesn't have an effect, right? So there's nothing. I mean, I went for a physical the other week, and the doctor asks me, and he says, hey, are you taking any medication? I go, well, it's kind of funny. When I was in Israel, my mother told me that you're over 45. I'm just surprised of surprises, even though I'm not old gray. I am over 45. And my mother said to me, it's like, I think every person over 45 should take a baby aspirin every day. So I said, yeah, I just started doing that, and I feel so much better. It's working out so good for me. And he says to me, you're the psychologist, but have you ever heard of the placebo effect? I said, why doesn't everybody say make the same thing? I was on it for 4 days, right? So yeah, I said, why doesn't he says, there's no such thing as putting medication in your mouth. You are, by definition, altering the body's chemistry. So is that going to be an issue that one has to look at? So now I've got Dina de Malchus Adina, and I've got the issues of, is it going to be an issue for Shmir Saguf, right? Which is pretty much what Moshe is putting out. Anything else?
Let's say it's the opposite. Let's say someone has surgery, and they have to take Vicodin or something.
Okay.
Say is that, I mean, it depends. If it's measured,
right,
and it's not excessive, and it's only for a limited time, and then after the duration.
So you're already getting into the issue. You're picking up on the issue, but I hear you. We'll get into it. I just want to first make sure I'm sketching out the issues I need to think of. I hear you. We'll put that on the table.
I don't know if this is weird, but are you cheating?
Oh, I think that is not weird. I think we need to look at the question, right? We're breaking down the Shiloh. Let's look. So we got it. We got Dina Malchus Adina. We got the Shmiras Haguf. But of course, if that's the case, you never take medication. Says Morty. So you know we have to think about that from that perspective. And then we have the question so far of, well, what about cheating, right? And we'll figure out what that means. Anything else? So I thought of one other issue, and then my friend Rabbi Leibowitz, who I love very much. He pointed out a last issue which I couldn't believe I didn't think of. I got very nervous about the question of, am I creating a dependence? Is a person allowed to do something that creates a dependence? And of course, that raises a lot of questions to this guy who's jacked up on caffeine right now. So, you know, it's a worthwhile discussion and conversation. And Rabbi Leibowitz says, how about the fact that, like, you know, is there a lack of emunah over here? The Ribono Shel Olam, you know, puts you in this world. He gives you certain kachas and talents. And, you know, are you, is there an emunah issue over here to be looked at as well? So let's take them apart. I'd say let's start with the first one first. Let's talk about Dina de Machus de Dina, and then we'll work our way across, and we'll see where we go with this. So as far as the Dina de Machus de Dina is concerned, what is the nature of the rule? So we know that the Gemara quotes in a couple of places, Gittin and Darim, if I'm not mistaken, Baba Basra, I'm sure, right? The Gemara says, always in the name of the same person, Shmuel, that the halacha is Dina de Machus de Dina. The law of the land is the law. Why? Why is the law of the land the law? Huh?
People would be at each other's throat.
So by what authority do we say the law of the land is the law? By what authority? What's the basis, right? If I look through 613 mitzvos, I would be able to say that Shmuel came up with this idea of Dina and Machus Dina because...
But I want the Goyim upset at us for breaking the rules.
Eva? That's the real reason? That's it? You're coming up with Eva?
It's not just Eva, it's Sakana.
Why is it Sakana? And what are the limitations?
But now we live in a civilized democracy. But back, you know, not throughout the millennia, you know, people were looking for any excuse to nail a couple of Jews.
But what does that do for me? What does that do for me? Well, so they're going to nail, whether the law is the law or the law is not the law, they can nail the Jews. There was this man with a funky mustache who kind of proved that, right? We don't really think too highly of him. We'll call him a Davar Acher, but, you know, a Russia, or whatever, Yimach Shemo. So, but he made the law of the land the law. Does that mean the Jew has to abide by that law? No, ridiculous, absolutely not. No, so let's start easy, right? What would be the most obvious reason why the law of the land is the law? Halachically. Thank you very much. That to me would have been the easiest answer. That the law of the land, the law of the land is the law because we have a concept called Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. They precede Matan Torah. The whole world is obligated by them. The seventh of those is the fact that the Goyim also have an obligation to set up a system of law. It kind of seems silly if we hold the Goyim responsible, then we don't have to keep those laws. So, ergo, and this is not my own, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer points this out, that by definition, the law of the land is the law. Now, of course, that assumes that the law of the land is just, right? So, for instance, if you live in Stone or Nazi Germany, right, I am pretty sure the law of the land probably should not apply to the law, right? And if that's the case, what would the law of the land over here be? What's the issue over here? It's about drug laws, right? I mean, am I violating the law of the land? The law of the land says that you can only prescribe Adderall under these circumstances to these people, and if I'm taking Adderall or someone is prescribing Adderall for me, not correctly, not under these circumstances, he is in violation of the law. That's one approach to Dina de Malchus Adina, and if that is the case, then we have a serious Dina de Malchus Adina issue over here. What else you got? Anyone else? So by definition, the Kavna Rav comes along, the Dvar Avram of Kavna, in his Sefer, in Chelek Aleph, Simen Aleph, very first one in the book, he says that the law of the land is Hefker based in Hefker, right? That Beis Din has a right. If Beis Din wants to eminent domain something of mine, they have the right to go ahead and do so. It's not exactly the same thing, but he says if you live in a centralized society, right, Beis Din has a right to go ahead and take things away, and the centralized authority in a particular country has a right to take things away, because that's called, it's a more broad-based Hefker Beis Din. The difference between the Dvar Avram and Rav Isser Zalman, though, is that Hefker Beis Din Hefker doesn't apply to everything. It only applies to Dinei Mamonos, to financial matters. And so therefore, if we adopt the Dvar Avram, maybe the law of the land is the law, does not apply to non-financial matters, which is a little bit difficult. There are two other major systems.
This
go ahead.
Thing is it's for financial gain, not
I'll get there. Yeah. First, that goes back to your other point. I'll get there. But when we're thinking about it, excellent. You're right. You're spot on. But before I get there, huh? So the Rashba says it's cited by the Beis Yosef and Choshen Mishpat Simen Chavav, and the Rashba basically says, listen, you live in a country, the king owns the country, you keep his rules because he's the king. The Ran in the Dar makes a very similar comment, and he just basically says, do you know why the law of the king is the law? The law of the land is the law? Because if you don't keep it, we kick you out. So up until this year, had I looked at that, I would have said the same thing applies to the United States, right? If you don't keep the law, you get kicked out. But, you know, Congress doesn't exactly... We have laws about immigration, and if you don't keep the law, we give you 2 Mets tickets and a Chase card, a Visa card. I think I explained last week, I don't understand the Wilpons are the ones I just don't get. They're the biggest losers in this entire deal. Wait till opening day and the subsequent games. Right? Who's going to go to a baseball game knowing that the only people in the park are people who are criminals and crooks and whatever? Who wants to sit next to somebody like that? I'm going to pay a price. You ever think about that? Nobody's talking about this. I don't understand it. I ask everybody, I'm not a Met fan, but I ask everybody else, what was in it for the Mets to give all the tickets? But, you know, to de Blasio and the Chevre over there. But once upon a time, the Rush, now it sounds like the Rashba, they all understood the idea of the law of the land as the law is because when you live in a country, the sovereign leader of the country or the leadership of the country basically says, if you don't keep our laws, we will kick you out. You're only invited to be here, if you will, keep our laws. And that's the reason why we have to follow that. And if that's the case, do you have to follow drug laws? The answer is yes. And you know what happens if you don't? Right? Huh? Even if you sign, right.
If you're willing to accept the consequences, why does Dita Demachus apply?
Because just because you're willing to accept the consequences doesn't mean that the obligation of Dita Demachus is okay. If I am willing to accept the consequences of stealing, right? It means I have to go to a Mets game and I have to, right? That doesn't mean that therefore stealing is mutter.
No,
I think even Big Bird will tell you, whether he is mayor of New York or a big yellow character walking down Sesame Street, I think that each one will tell you are not allowed to steal and stealing is bad, right? Either one will tell you. But if you get caught on a petty larceny charge, they're going to give you 2 tickets to the Mets. That still doesn't make stealing mutter. I'm accepting the consequences, right? I'm going to steal a sandwich from a sandwich shop just so I can get my 2 tickets and now have something to eat when I'm at the ballpark.
The difference is that stealing is inherently bad, whereas we just said that the
reason for
the Mahusa is because of the consequences.
Even if I'm not Jewish, right? Stealing is you're applying an ethical principle called stealing is inherently bad in a society that is. Okay, so pick an iser that is not its own distinct one of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. Chemda, right? Walking up to people and screaming at them. Public intoxication, right? Lewd comments and whistling at people inappropriately.
All right, it's not against the law.
To make loud and rude noises, and I think there is something called noise pollution, right? Keeping your stereo on too loud at night, playing okay. Yaku Shwaki.
All right.
Whatever it is that the boys do here, every couple of weeks, because they finish the Misachta or something.
The noise ordinance.
If the boys want to go to, if they want to have a raffle to see, you know, as a prize for, you know, the guy who learned the Misachta best, they'll all get entered into a raffle. They'll play it loud enough. The cops will come. They will go ahead and give them 2 tickets to the Mets. Now they have a prize.
So every time you cross on the crosswalk, you're over an iser.
So that's it. Like I said to you, that could be, the answer is yes. Now does that mean that it's usser? So that if you do it, you have to turn yourself in? That's a discussion for a different time. But let's just tell you that in the last volume of the posthumous volume of Yechav Adas, the one that just came out, he has some very interesting things to say about that. That's been on the back burner of some of the new stuff that I've wanted to bring into this particular share. But again, behind all of it, we go back to the point, and all of this notwithstanding, that this is yet another one of the arguments in favor of Dina D'Malchusa. The Rashbam says that it has nothing to do with the king and the king kicking me out of the land. If I move into a country or I move into a neighborhood, right, I agree to live by the rules of the neighborhood. It doesn't mean I necessarily have to like it. But if I move into a neighborhood, I say Yotris in the neighborhood, or maybe that's not Dina Malchus Adina, but Rabbi Teich certainly wish it would be, right? But if joking aside, you move into a neighborhood, so you know, I told you it was timely, everything's connected. Josh, you see that? Just so you, when you're listening to this, when it's already tomorrow, you should just know that, right? When you live in a neighborhood, you live in a neighborhood, and so if there are noise ordinances, or there are littering ordinances, or there's a recycling rule in the neighborhood, the fact that you have to keep that is not because there's another whatever, it's because Dina Machus the Dina, and they have a right to go ahead and make those principles. So that would be some of the issues at hand. So other than the Dvar of Ram, applying the prescription case over here, and if the government says you cannot prescribe it just willy-nilly, you have to go ahead. You would have to seriously consider, you know, is there a violation of Dina Machus Adina? Now, as far as this second issue about my concern, because you want to ask something? You want to say something?
You just said if the law doesn't allow you to prescribe it, how is he getting it? Is he getting it from a friend?
So there must be, so in this particular case, I think because he was only the friend, but I think he has somebody who will write a prescription.
So now
you have a new question. Is that Livnei there?
Right.
Or somebody selling loose ones in the cafeteria in school.
Right. Or someone selling loose ones in the cafeteria in school.
Prescribing it.
Yeah. Right. So each one may present that. Although that should be an added issue. If I go to a doctor and ask him to dummy up one, I may be in violation of Livnei, and it depends how easy it is to get a doctor to dummy it up. If I won't go to you, I go to somebody else. I'm not over on Livnei.
At that point, it could be argued that he could, meaning if he's healthy enough to, if he determined that it would be safe, and a one-off Adderall for it, then he can get a prescription.
You're going back to Morty's point before. We'll get there. I don't want to leave Morty's point out, but yes, hold on. I still have to hit that for other two topics. Just as far as the issue of creating a dependence and whether that's mutter, so I want to refer you to a very famous tshuva. A lot of the tshuvas commentary tonight will come from Rav Moshe Feinstein. This is, of course, the entrance into the month of Adar, and the Rav Moshe Feinstein's Yahrzeit is coming up right upon us in the near future, Zayin Adar. So that's Zayin Yud Gimel. He was born on Zayin. So in Igris Moshe, Yoredeya Chelek Gimel Simen Lamed Hey. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva, a very famous tshuva on marijuana. And so in the context, he says, by the way, I can't point to a particular isser in the Torah and tell you, the Torah says, lo tashe ein marijuana. No, there is no such pasuk in the Torah. Right? But Rav Moshe does try to figure out why exactly it's a bad plan to start smoking marijuana. And in the context, he says, v'ochu gorin taiva gedola asher yosim et taiva sachila v'chadoma hatzrichim la'adam lachyoso. He says, creating an addiction, a desire, for something that is worse than the desire for eating.
It
causes it. Right? That's true too. There people won't be able to handle it. He says, who is chamor? He says such a person is in violation of something very serious, similar to the concept of the ben sor umora. And he says you're not allowed to bring yourself to that situation. They tell a story of Yaakov Kamenetsky. I've heard this from family members. I grew up in Kamenetsky country, known as the Five Towns, contrary to popular belief. Right? So in Kamenetsky country, so Rabbi Yam Kamenetsky and his children, used to tell us all the time that one of the things that the family knows is that Rav Yaakov at one point had a smoking addiction, and it was very hard for him, and he dealt with it. This was when he was very, very young in yeshiva. So when the famous book that came out, that was written by Rav Nassim Kamenetsky, Zechet Tzadik Livracha, what was it called? The Making of a Gadol. So inside that book, there is a story that's told where Rav Yaakov basically said, there's one person in his life, he's having a very, very hard time forgiving. I think he said, I'll never forgive. And that is the guy who got him started in smoking. Was an older guy in Slabodka, and he said it made him sick, and it held him up and whatever. And as a result, the only way to get out of learning with this guy was to go out to a different yeshiva for a year, and he missed the opportunity to see and learn from Rav Chaim Brisker. So he said, I lost that opportunity in life. Why? Because of smoking. He says, so I, not to mention the fact that it drove me crazy, and I was addicted, and it was a real problem. So he felt that part of the reason why he had a hard time learning. So what does it mean to have a hard time learning? He felt that came about because of the smoking. So Rav Moshe, Rav Yaakov, they certainly seem to have a problem with taking things that will create a dependence. From what I'm able to understand about a psychostimulant, it does, especially as it works well, it does build a certain dependence, and therefore it might not be the greatest thing to get involved in. How about the cheating issue? What's the problem with that? So I cheated, so what?
Only cheating if no one else...
Oh, so CNN does report, there is a report out there that suggests that something like 75% increase, level of increase in people who are using who are reporting need to use these types of medications on exams. And so they're saying that the level is up. In major universities, they said the number of kids who are on the medications is like astronomical, does not meet normal boundaries and statistically of people who are suffering. So Yossi says, well, what if everybody else is doing it? So if everybody else is doing it, what does that do? Right, so even though it may be a violation of Dina Machus Dina, it certainly doesn't become a question of Geneva. And why is that? So there's a famous, again, for me personally, I like to couch this in yet another famous tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, the famous Regent's tshuva. This tshuva used to hang on the wall of my room because it was one of those cool tshuvas right next to the tshuva about platonic relationships, which we'll get to another point in time. Huh? Yeah, no, this is the tshuva. Rav Moshe has a tshuva, Nigris Moshe, about platonic relationships, where the guy writes to him, and he basically says to the guy, you're joking, right? You know, you think there's such a thing as platonic? Ain't happening, right? But, it was like, to me, it's so cool the way Rav Moshe handled both these shadows when I was a, that's what, instead of having a picture of Dr. J on that wall, although I had him on the other wall, right? You know, I had these two tshuvas, and my mother still tells my kids about it. Anyway, so in or Igros Moshe, Choshe Mishpach Chelek Beisim and Lamed. So Moshe was asked the question, can I cheat on the regents? So, right? And he says, I hear only Orthodox Jews, they're the ones who are cheating on the regents. So, and he heard that the yeshivas are allowing the kids to cheat on the regents. So Moshe writes in the tshuva, he says, not only is this usher, but because of Dina Machus Dina, it's Geneva. It's not just Geneva Das, that you're not allowed to steal from people. It's Geneva for a different reason. And why is that? If I cheat on the regents, I'll do better. If I do better, what's going to happen? I'll get into a better college. When I get into a better college, I get into a better professional school. I get into a professional school, I get a better job. When I get a better job, I took that job that doesn't belong to me, which means that I took it from somebody else. I've now stolen from those people. Not only that, says Rav Moshe, when you take the job, you're taking the job from the employer under false pretenses. Now you're stealing from him too. So Rav Moshe says, this one act of stealing, right, is Genevas Mamo Mamish. Even if you want to tell yourself they understand it and whatever, it's all okay, everybody does it. Rav Moshe says, in his opinion, this is a problem. He also says you're not allowed to lie.
The implication says
you
to go to college.
No, I'm adding the college to peace myself.
I don't see at all how this is considered cheating versus any other method of better preparing yourself for the test,
right,
getting a good night's sleep, drinking coffee, so you're exercising. Any other way to prepare yourself?
Because society allows it, because the law allows you to do those things, but the law limits. But the only reason.
I drink a lot of coffee before my test, so I'm more.
Because the people giving the exam and the people who get grades, score the exam, or use the results of the exam, give permission and supposedly norm their scoring with certain assumptions that in place, and you skew those assumptions.
So you skew it by going to a Kaplan course and paying money for a Kaplan course.
Again, supposedly they take that into account, but here you have all these people moving in a different direction. So here's where I think, where although Rav Moshe has that...
give you all kinds of hints and secrets out of...
how to understand the... and the people at the College Board understand that that's the case, and therefore they're supposed to be able... I think that's part of the exam. But, the truth is that.
But if it was prescribed to someone, no one would have a problem with him.
Right,
right.
Because it's
so
marked on the exam.
Right. Okay, so if this person is at a point where he feels he has to take it, If someone didn't, if this wasn't an issue, right, we wouldn't even be having a shot to begin with. The fact that this person's even asking for it means that even though he wasn't prescribed it, he feels that this will help better give him the concentration to sit through this.
Or he thinks it will give him an advantage that he's not, he otherwise would not be able to get to. So that goes back, what you're saying is similar to something else he said before, and I think the answer is, it really depends. What does it depend on? Not just the individual. How many other people are doing this? Like, according to Rabbi Leibowitz, this is like rampant in Ivy League schools.
What does rampant mean?
Rampant means that, rampant means 65, 75, 80% of the kids, 80% of the freshman class in one of the Ivy League schools reported they're all taking psychostimulant medication. I'm pretty sure whichever Ivy it was, I don't remember which one off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure they didn't take in 80 kids, all of whom have ADHD, and my kid can't get into Harvard.
Right,
I'm a bittered father, right?
One more thing, even according to what you said, is it still cheating if they don't announce that it's something you can't do?
It's definitely, again, it's not cheating. If the society looks the other way, if the testing environment, forget about Dina de Malchusa, I'm talking about straight up Geneva. It's not straight up Geneva if it's something that everyone expects. It's not straight up Geneva if I go to the black market, going back, how many years ago was it, Morty, when we were in Israel? Right? 92, right? So in 1992, if you went to change money at the Kent store, or the guy on top of Uri's Pizza, right, it was not considered a Isser. The guy on top of Uri's Pizza was the real estate guy. No, Uri's Pizza in Mea Sharm. Or the Kent store on King George Street, which is no longer there anymore. Right? But I went to look. Anyhow, so I remember when we went to Rubenstein, the post at Kinkaren Biavna, we asked him, he said, technically speaking, we're supposed to change at the bank, get ourselves ripped off, right? Lose like half the money we were putting in there, right? But of course, so he says to me, is the government particular about this? Yeah, it's like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, elbow, elbow, you know. Don't do that, right? They knew where this guy was. The guy on top of Uri's Pizza, the guy there, he was officially a real estate agent. I never saw anybody go in looking for a house. He had a sign on the door with one apartment somewhere for sale. I asked him once, hey, can I go look at that apartment? He goes, what apartment? Do you have money you want to change or not? Like, you know. The bottom line is the whole country was the whole country. It was well known that you can find the right people. Today, you don't even have to work on that. They have places that are set up like that. Nobody goes into the bank to change any money, right? Us old people that we know, we're still looking for the Kent store, right? Remember, right? Tell them I'm right. Tell them I'm right. We knew where the Kent store was. We were in Israel at the same time. So as far as that issue is concerned, I can't call it Geneva if the society is all finding it A-okay. How about the Shmiras HaGufa Nefesh issue? How about that? So Morty says, so I say to you, wait a second, you're not allowed to destroy your body. What, just for an exam? For a GMAT? For an LSAT? For an MCAT? For a DAT? You're allowed to go ahead and put yourself and play with the body chemistry? So, you know, maybe that's an issue. Maybe it's not an issue.
Maybe it's a trade-off.
So who has the right to make that trade-off? Okay. So here, actually, well, Josh, I'm about to bring you another relevant quote from the parsha. Go ahead.
Then we make the trade-off all the time.
Yeah.
Who says it? It's a good thing to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning so you can go to DAF. Right?
Everybody. Everybody. Except my wife.
But if you think that you can get a high degree and then have more time to relax your body later on in life or whatever it is, then so you're trading. You're saying I'll be able to take care of myself better in the long term to not stress my body for a very short amount of time.
Okay, so let's look at some of the potential side effects here. The guy puts himself on Adderall, and I went back and checked some of the side effects. He can suffer from loss of appetite. Some of us, not such a big deal. He may suffer from insomnia, worsening of some psychiatric issues. That is quite a serious one, right? Irregular heartbeat, eye pressure. All of these things as a result of psychostimulant abuse.
Every medication that you see advertised give you a whole list of possible things that...
I'm not talking about possible. I didn't include all the ones that I didn't think were, like, you know, in the range of, things that are relatively normal. These are just the ones that are relatively, they're a miyad hamatsui, right? If they were overwhelming possibilities, they wouldn't have gotten approved. But they're what we call miyad hamatsui, that in the minority cases, but identifiably minority.
But any medication that has side effects. The reason why it's a drug is because the disease is better. Curing the disease is more important than suffering.
So under what circumstances is a person allowed? That's Morty's point from before. Morty says to me, undergoes surgery, right? He's in terrible pain, right? Four extractions, right? And we're all impacted, and he's going to basically be in chipmunk mode for the next couple of days, right? And he's got his sister's Sheva Brachas that weekend, right? And he's got to make it through the Sheva Brachas.
Huh?
Usually it's not planned, and they can't even do the fourth one because it's so impacted. Not that I'm talking about anybody who may be talking currently standing in this room, right? But, the doc goes ahead, he does three out of the four extractions, and he goes ahead and he puts you on a whole host of medications, but he tells you, you're going to come down from this stuff, you're going to be in terrible pain. So he puts him, not on Vicodin, but I think he puts him on Oxy... Percocet. So he puts him on Percocet. And now all of a sudden, an individual who is so tight that he wears a suit to sleep, right, is now has black gaps in his one famous weekend, known famously in his family as the Lost Weekend, right? Nobody knows officially, right? I'm not talking about anybody in particular, but, there was this thing. Apparently, he spoke at Chalice. So this guy who may be talking right now, nobody knows what he said, but apparently it was the best speech, as far as the family is concerned, that he ever gave. Right? So in such a situation, Morty says, you want to tell me, Rabbi, that guy shouldn't have taken the medication?
No, he should take it, but the dentist cannot.
So at what point in time does a person have a right to decide when yes and when no? So here again, I turn to Reb Moshe Feinstein, right? Because why not? So Reb Moshe has a tshuva negris Moshe in Chelek Himo Simen Tzadi, where he was asked about a guy who decides on Yom Kippur, he can't fast, but it's killing him. So he decides, you know what he's going to do? He's going to put himself on an IV. And he's going to go through Yom Kippur on an IV. So he asks, the guy comes to Ramosha and he says to Ramosha, it's good, right? It's a good idea. So Ramosha says, look, if you get an IV, he says, first thing I have to tell you is, Poshut Lanias Daiti Shena Mechuyev Lasoza. If you have a legitimate heter, not to fast, don't fast. He says, you're not Mechuyev, right? And then not only that, he said, you don't have. If you're in a situation of patur, you don't have obligation to put yourself back into a situation of chayev, especially using medicinal means. We read at the end of Rishon in this coming week's parsha, right? Rak shivto yitain, v'rapo yirape, and he will get there for what do we learn? V'rapo yirape says the Gemara in Baba Kama mikan from here nita shenitan rishus larofe larapos. From here, we find that the doctor has permission to heal. Asks the Ramosha and others, I don't understand. What does that mean, he has permission?
Should have a moon and Hashem healing.
Right, so a doctor has a right to go ahead and do that. By the way, there's a Choshe Mishpat ramification also, which is, he has a right to take these risks. But, says Ramosha, he only has a right to lirapei chohacholim in machalosam. He only has a right to do what? To heal somebody who's already ill. He says, but you don't have, if you're going to do something just so that the person can be obligated to fast, you're going to put the guy on IV just so we can officially halakhically fast. That's not one of the things a doctor is given the rishus to go ahead and do refuah for. So, if that's the case, so here also, yet we take the situation of medication sort of seriously. So if a person needs the medication, there's room. There's room to argue that it's 100% within the guidelines of the doctor to go ahead and do so. But the guy who's sitting and buying it from the pharmacist, not inside the drugstore, but underneath the light post outside of the drugstore, and he's like he's the overnight guy outside because they don't really stay open during the day, right? Or he buys it in the cafeteria. He is not engaging in the proper use of refuah. And so therefore, it might be an argument to say that you're not allowed to go ahead and do so. So again, as far as the Shmir Saguf, yes, if you're there, please, by all means, use it. But once you start ingesting things that have ramifications that could be serious, right? That's something that a person has to think about. So my friend Rabbi Leibowitz, he says to me, Rebbe has a piece about this. Now, I remember hearing this from Rav Schachter. I was looking for it online. I was not there when he said this. I listened to the shiur. So it was at one of the Chinuch conferences, one of the talks that he gave about Chinuch. And he was asked about about the overuse of psychostimulants in children. Certainly in the United States, we overprescribe Ritalin. Ritalin is a great thing. And when kids need it, does it make a difference? But sometimes in certain communities, we way, way overprescribe. And Rav Schachter took a very hard line. He said, who says every kid needs to be able to be on Ritalin? Sometimes it's not a function of the child. It's a function of the educational model that we're using. And if we're just shoving kids on medication, we have to make sure that the kid needs the medication. So again, a medical model needs to be there. And Rav Schachter at that point said that chinuch can't be a one-size-fits-all model. It's funny, there's a tshuva. I get these packets once a month from Rav Zilberstein's Kollel. Probably one of the best investments I make every year because the shadows are awesome. I mean, you've heard some of them in this room. So going back a couple of years, in one of the Bavei Hamud, and that's the name of the monthly journal, so this guy writes to Rav Zilberstein, he says, my kid's in cheder. He had a bad month. So the Rebbe gets called in for PTA by the Rebbe. The Rebbe tells him, I think that your kid's a little too jumpy, and so maybe you should put him on medication. So the father's a good father. He makes the decision. The guy just puts the kid on the medication. And then all of a sudden, a couple weeks later, the Rebbe calls and he says, I just want you to know, since we put him on the medication, he's gevaldik. In fact, I'm so careful with him, I let him sneak out every day to go ahead and take his medication at the right time. But you should just know, in order not to embarrass him, I tell him, Yanko, why don't you get the Rebbe coffee? Right? So he goes out and gets the Rebbe coffee. Right? So the kid comes, the father calls the kid over, and he says, I'm so proud of you, the medicine's working so well. And the kid says, hey, Ta. He says, yeah, I really appreciate it, and I have been trying harder. By the way, you should just know something. I haven't taken the medicine. He says, right? He says, yeah, I've never taken the medicine. Every day, Rebbe sends me out to go make coffee. And I take the medicine, I open up, and I pour it into the coffee. Right? So he says, really? He says, yeah, every day I've been pouring into the Rebbe's coffee. And by the way, you should just know, the Rebbe has gotten so much better. So he says that they went to the Menahel, because their father's freaking out. And the Menahel says, yeah, the Rebbe has a little bit of an ADHD problem, we think. And so Baruch Hashem, it works. So now the father writes. See, what's the shaila, right? What's the shaila? The father writes. The father writes to Rav Zilberstein to ask a shaila. Who now has to pay for the medication, right? When the father was paying for the medication, that was because it was for his kid. Right. But since it went to the Rebbe, maybe the Rebbe has to pay for the medication. Gvaldik shaila. I'm telling you, you can't find this. I can't make this up. If you want, I got it somewhere at home, right? But awesome, right? Sometimes we have to understand, like, we have to just make sure we're using these things properly. Rabbi Leibowitz also reminded... Huh? So Rav Zilberstein told him, he said, look, did you get benefit? He says, yes. He says, then you can't charge the Rebbe. Can't pass the cost off to the Rebbe. They did. They told the Rebbe. Now I had to tell the Rebbe. Right? So, I noticed they make it. I'm in the store last week, and I noticed Coca-Cola is now coming in these tall, thin cans. right? Like, usually they come in the smaller fat cans, right? So I'm like, wow, this is going to look great for, you know, shalachmanas and whatever. And look, they were two for a dollar. So I figured I'd pick them up, right? I bring them home. I look inside. I realize that's not Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is now making like a 5-hour energy drink. Yeah, thank God I discovered it before the kids did. Let's play. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Let's play. And it's got all the ginseng and the guarana and all that other stuff. Like, boy, you got to be careful. So I thought that was rather funny. So Rabbi Leibowitz also reminded me, Rashetta also points out that playing, when you are, just from a hashkafa side, when you are playing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans for you, so you're going against Hashem's plan. You have to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a creator, and if you are messing around with his creativity, so you're going to get into trouble. He says that Rabbi Shetta likes to quote from the Munkach Rebbe, the Minchas HaLuzer. He likes to quote him all the time. So the Minchas HaLuzer had one meeting with in Eretz Yisrael, which I think there's a lot written about this encounter when he went to meet with the great Sephardi Kabbalist, the Saba Kedisha. So one of the thoughts of the Saba Kedisha that Rosh Hashanah likes to quote comes from this pasuk that appears in our davening. We say it every morning. Hanosein Sheleg Katsamer. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives snow like wool. What does it mean, Hanosein Sheleg Katsamer? Right? What does that mean? Oh, God gives snow. Snow is light, wool's light. Snapshot. The Saba Kedisha says pshats like this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us our nisyonos based on our abilities. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is no Saint Shelek. When does he give snow? Katsamer. To a place where there is wool. Why? So that this way you're able to handle the nisyon of the Shelek. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes it snow in the middle of Boca Raton. I think the world would come to an end. Look, a drop of snow hits Yerushalayim. They shut school for a week. Right? So can you imagine Boca Raton? If they got a snowstorm, do you know what would happen? Pandemonium would break out. It would be Trump's fault, but then pandemonium would break out within the context. A person has to understand. So, within the context, or Rebbe would say to me, oh, you have to remember, Rebbe said to us, right, the importance of understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives each person his challenge, gives each person his kochos and her kochos, and so therefore, that's an extra factor to put into place. So, yes, there may be certain ways around certain aspects of this question, but in short, I think it's kind of hard to just simply give a blanket head to say, yeah, you can do it just because. So we talked about all the different areas that come into the Shaila, but I think that I would strongly disagree with this particular practice, and his friend should study a little bit and have a little bit tachon, a couple of extra kapitlach, and tell him when he's getting down a little bit. And Bezos Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care, Ragli Chasidav Yishmor, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of all of us in our right time. Okay, I think we'll stop here, and we'll save that others for another point in time. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.